Hello and welcome to Ordinary, a podcast that aims to help Christians live for Christ in everyday life. My name is Josh Bannister, and each week I sit down with a couple of UK pastors, Graham Nichols and Mark Grantham. Fear is one of those universals when it comes to human experience. We all feel fear at times. Fear for our lives or the lives of others, fear of suffering, fear of embarrassment, fear of loneliness, the list goes on. How does our relationship with Jesus affect our feelings of fear? How should our relationship with Jesus change our feelings of fear? We'll be chewing through that in our main section today. But first, we reflect on the PM's lockdown roadmap. Enjoy. I'll see you around the back.
I'm Mark Bentham.
And I'm Graham Nichols.
And I'm Josh Bannister, and you're listening to Ordinary. We'd like to give a big welcome to our global Ordinary audience that I've just been informed about by Graham and Mark.
Why are you laughing,
in,
Josh?
Because, I don't know, I feel this is counterfeit in some way.
No, I mean, you know, let's not make it out into thousands, but there's at least, you know, two of them listening in Brazil.
Yeah. And Portugal.
And Portugal.
Well, many people, I think the whole nation of Brazil is listening in their own way.
In their own way, yeah.
And possibly people in Wales and Scotland.
Yeah, possibly. So we could maybe claim five countries. That's still global. I mean, the label still stands. So
if you are one of those listeners, email ordinary@cchh.org.uk.
Yeah, actually, that would be amazing.
Or if you're in another nation that we have missed out.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep.
Time for news now. Give us your views. News.
We've had a lot of COVID talk again because of, I suppose, our Prime Minister giving us his roadmap for exiting lockdown just on Monday, or we're recording this on a Wednesday, so a couple of days ago. Reaction to the news of the timetable and things, but also your reaction to the idea of having COVID passports that would enable people to access certain events or do certain things if they can prove that they've been vaccinated. What are your thoughts on those two things, guys?
I think on the rules in general, it was something. It probably, leaving aside any individual views about it, I guess from a church point of view, it was kind of business as usual probably until June, with maybe a gradual kind of lifting during April. So it probably wasn't that exciting for church leaders.
But do you think they'll be singing in June? Or?
I think it follows logically that if social distancing and everything is released, then singing should be possible. Mm. I'm just lobbying for singing to happen sooner.
Right.
It's a judgment.
To say it's not exciting for church, I think it is exciting for churches in the sense that, you know, we've only got three or four more months whereby this could be the thing, that we could all be lifted by mid-June. We can get on with stuff, start to meet up again. Small groups can happen in, you know, so in other words, it feels like there is at least an end point now rather than uncertainty. It feels like, you know, we can get on with stuff, that we can start beginning to think about summer, how we catch up again, how we can come together in those ways. So I'm a little bit more upbeat than my friend.
Yeah, I'm feeling a bit gloomster about it, but I am positive in the longer term. I suppose one might have hoped things might have happened sooner, so I suppose that's why there's a slight downbeat. But I think more importantly on the topic of vaccinations, I was quite exercised thinking about it this morning, listening to some debate that was going on, that there's a discussion about whether you need a passport, a vaccine passport, in other words, a certificate to say I've had a vaccine, to everything from international travel, which I more understand, through to going to a pub or to a gym. And I guess overall, although I can see the logic in one way, I think it's quite a strong change, big change in sort of civil liberties. And I think from a Christian point of view, that kind of individual choice and ability to take risks as well, kind of taking that away and making that state controlled, I'm not sure whether that's a good thing in the long term. And I'm not even sure it's that effective, and it's kind of discriminatory against people who choose not to have the vaccine or who have some medical condition where they can't have the vaccine. You know, what do you do with them? Put them in a special room and kind of separate them. So I think there's lots of moral. I suppose it's not a direct Christian kind of principle application idea. It's kind of around the periphery of rights and responsibilities and risk taking. I think it'll all boil over. I think if the vaccine stops becoming, sorry, if the virus stops becoming headline news, I think it'll probably all sort of collapse.
Are other countries already going down that route though?
I think Israel is doing something.
Yes, I heard the same.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what you think, Mark, whether you have any instant concerns about it.
Well, I think purely on the discrimination that I think, you know, there's a group of people who, you know, in terms of maybe just don't get around to doing the vaccine for whatever reasons. That's one group. But those who cannot have it for medical or for ethical reasons have chosen not to have it, I think it then becomes an unfair discrimination. And I'm not sure how you then apply that in a fair way.
Yeah. And it's only a statistical thing anyway, because even with a vaccine, you'll transmit to some degree, nobody knows quite what, and you may catch it to some percentage. So it's not so you've eliminated it by having the vaccine. You've just greatly reduced the percentages. And if loads of people have had the vaccine and there's less virus around, then probably the risk isn't going to be low anyway. So it's probably not worth the faff of doing it. Yeah. So it may be a temporary debate.
My hunch is pragmatics will kick in. You know, pressure of the hospitality industry, pressure of the travel industry, just to say we don't want, you know, like, and the tourism and just the effect on an economy of, you know, just restricting who can come, making it more difficult. I think in all, you know, pragmatically, how do you do it? You suddenly got to print up certificates everywhere. I think it just becomes, there's a pragmatic that will overrule it. It's my
I think it's one to watch as Christians. There is the principle of, are you being selfish by not having it? So, you know, I don't think we can land it today, but it's worth saying this is not a sort of entirely secular discussion.
Okay.
It's a thing to think through with Christian principles.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps we need a podcast on it.
Perhaps we do when it comes to get clearer, perhaps.
Yeah. I bet that you thought it was nearly over, but we haven't started yet. It's just like on Sunday you thought we were done, but you still had communion left. Today we're going to be talking about fear and how the Christian life interacts with fear, what a Christian's relationship with fear is, should be, could be, isn't, is. I suppose it would be helpful to draw some just rough definitions at the start and understand what exactly, for the purposes of this discussion, you mean by fear, how you're going to define it, whether you're going to separate it from ideas like anxiety, or whether that's sort of wrapped up in the same sort of category as fear. So can we just have a sort of rough definition of to guide this conversation?
I suppose you'd say it's an emotion, and it's an emotion reacting to the threat of something, pain, harm, danger, whatever else might be in that category, something that might hurt you in some way. So it's the emotional reaction to that. Is that a fair definition?
Yeah, I think fear then morphs into anxiety and worry. In other words, fear can then become the trigger for anxiety and worry, but they're probably two separate, they're separate in that sense. They often come together, but they're not, you know, I can be fearful without being anxious and worried. One level.
Yeah, and I think it's more emotional than rational, as in if you've got a massive boulder coming towards you that's, you know, that's so big it's going to crush you, there's a kind of rational, which is the intellectual sort of, this is going to crush me, but there's an emotional reaction to go with that, which will, you know, be a rush of blood, which will be all kinds of things happening, which will make you want to run, decide you're going to die or something, but it'll be a rush of emotion, won't it? And I think it's that thing which is not just intellectually observing.
It's not just an acknowledgement of a danger, it's a sort of biological and mental response to that danger, and how long that lasts and whether that's debilitating or not. And I think that's helpful. I think
I think it can move into more rational though as well. I don't think it's always instantaneous,
because
I think I can be fearful of things that I'm thinking about which actually are right fears. It's what I do with those fears.
Yeah, I think, like, by way of sort of continuing to introduce the topic and get us talking, I personally have had somewhat of a up and down relationship with fear and anxiety, particularly, and having sort of studied a bit of psychology at college and then done some subsequent work sort of in my work on a course to do with stress, I had a time of really digging into what anxiety and fear was, because I was trying to understand it in my own life, but I was also building this sort of course about it. And I think it's quite useful to understand, because it helps you understand where it comes from, what it's useful for, and then perhaps how you can start to mitigate it. And then we can talk about how the gospel interacts with those things. So if you'll give me a minute or two, maybe I'll just outline sort of what I learned. So I'm not an expert in any way, but I think just a couple of sentences might help us go into some other questions.
Professor Limbus, we're going to call you.
I like it. I'm going to shave the rest of my beard and just have a moustache and then go by Professor Limbus from now on. So it seems obvious that fear, I suppose, is universal. It's part of the human condition. And it seems that it's a mechanism that's designed in some ways to keep us alive, right? So the limbic system kicks in when we're fearful. It gives us the physical power to fight or to run for our lives. So we talk a lot about the fight or flight, or even adding to that, the freeze system that we have in our body. I suppose the issue is that the same system that is useful during a stress response that could keep us alive is also the same system that acts when we don't really require the sort of chemical rush, the rush of adrenaline, that those things aren't going to be helpful for us. So our stress response isn't particularly useful, for example, when we're worried about an exam or about a medical test result, or if we're worried about money, finances. Our stress response biologically is not particularly useful in those situations. It's a little bit that there's a nice analogy to do with an engine of a car, that the human body runs a bit like a car engine, in that the engine has valves and pumps and pressure, and it's designed to be able to rev very highly at certain points, right? You can rev the engine very highly. And that's, we like to use that for fun, some of us, but that's actually also a safety feature, because what it does is it enables you to get out of trouble, a sticky spot, quickly. So if someone pulls out on you, or you're going round a roundabout and someone pulls out, the acceleration of the car is actually a safety thing. It enables you to get out of the way of danger. But if you're driving around in your car all day at max revs, you'll eventually blow up the engine. And there's something similar going on with the bodies, that if we live our lives in fear and anxiety, and therefore under the conditions of a stress response, like sustained stress response, there's real mental and biological danger and damage that's going on in the body. So that's kind of like what's happening with fear, like very, very loosely and roughly. You can do a lot of research and like a lot of reading into it. It's quite interesting. But I think the question becomes, how does a relationship with Jesus transform the way we see those stressors? Because the categories of stressors that there are, and there's people talk about them in different ways, but there's like broad categories of stressors. Those don't necessarily change when you become a Christian. You find the same thing stressful: family members passing away, health conditions, catastrophes outside of your control, like natural catastrophes, things like major life changes, moving house, divorce, marriage. Good things and bad things, these are all stress. They're part of the categories of stress. Those don't change. We still feel those when we're a Christian. So I suppose the question is, how does the relationship with Jesus affect our perspective on those things and our response to those stresses? So let's start there and see what you think. Comments on that, but also just building on that idea of how we deal with those stresses as Christians.
It's really interesting. I just got a bit lost in what you were saying there. I had a little question for you, Professor.
Go
which
ahead.
Which is presumably in your research that you've done, extensive research.
Yeah.
It's similar to anger and other things in that it's a kind of brain shuts down some functions and amplifies other functions in order to respond when you have a fearful response. Mm-hmm. It sort of goes into overdrive in certain areas of the brain in order that you run away or,
right.
or do whatever. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's an interesting thought. Mark may have a different view on this, that I was pondering on whether you had fear before the fall. So before Adam and Eve sinned, did you fear? And so when you were talking about sort of, you know, dangers and flight, which might help you, you didn't have wild animals to attack you. You had the provision of God that I guess even if an asteroid came and hit you on the head, God would revive you somehow.
Right,
I guess before the fall. It's a bit of a theoretical because we don't know what life would have been if in the if kind of, but it's interesting. But I certainly think whatever the biological response was then, it was holy, it was proportionate,
yeah,
and it did whatever it was supposed to do in order to for those dangers that were still there. It kind of helped you through them. Whereas ever since the fall, not just our fear of natural disasters, but our fear of animals and our fear of other people and our fear of God are amplified and they're bent out of shape. And I don't think in any sense that we do now that we feared before the fall. I think the first fear is when God comes back to the garden and Adam and Eve have eaten the apple, eaten the fruit, sorry. They fear. I think that's the first time they fear. Mm. So fear is kind of a result of the fall. You're looking a little bit unconvinced by that, Mark.
Well, it's interesting, you know, it depends on how we understand the body wired up, isn't it? So yeah. So the response system is, I suddenly see a fear, and the way my brain is wired is it goes straight to this part of the brain, I think the amygdala is how you, which then responds with either fight, flight, freeze. So the whole way the brain is wired is for that to happen. So it bypasses the kind of the rational thalamus area where you're kind of working through it and goes straight to this area so that you can respond. So I guess what I was trying to process was, even if pre the fall you're not worried about animals or people killing you, are there still things that might happen? In other words, you're walking along and you suddenly come across a thing that makes you stop. You know, in a sense, God has so wired it, designed it. And there's a right fear of, obviously, which is, I think, different to, in one sense, the fear of God when we use that language. So I guess that's what I was trying to process.
Because I think you can make the same argument about pain. Like, is there pain pre-fall? And I think pain in a similar way is actually a mechanism to keep you safe, to stop you from having harm to the body. So we think of it in a negative way.
If I hit my hand, there's a right sense of a fear that hurts, that my brain goes, boom, stop doing it. Mm-hmm. You know, putting your hand in a fire, kind of, you know, your brain says, ow. So I think that's what I'm saying. I think what did happen at the fall is those fears, as you said, were distorted and become amplified, and I stopped taking them to the right place. Mm.
I agree with that. Mm. I may not have said it very well, but I think the categories of fear greatly increase after the fall.
And perhaps anxiety is a post-fall thing, right? Because it seems to me that anxiety is separate from fear in the sense that anxiety is like a long-term dwelling on your worries and allowing them to make you fearful, whereas we could talk about fear as more of a sort of binary thing. It's like that thing is dangerous and I associate that with fear in some way, right fear, whereas anxiety is like I'm dwelling on this thing, I don't feel safe long term, like and that becomes less rational.
And I think we've got to recognize that there is fear is helpful. There are right things to be afraid of, that it's right for me to be afraid of because I am vulnerable, I am weak, I am, you know, finite. So all those things make fear there's a right thing to it at times. And I think this is interesting when you says that, you know, there are times when that system doesn't work. I think sometimes the system is there because actually what I need to learn to do is decipher the fear. So I need to decipher the fear. What is this telling me that I need to do? Sometimes it's just going to be instantaneous, but more often than not for us now, is what's this fear telling me about what I'm believing, what I'm trusting, where what I'm over worrying about, where I'm over anxious. And I think that's where it triggers. So I know in my own life that, you know, I can have a right fear that then becomes an over fear that then becomes intense anxiety. And it's slowing that process down. Now, I think there are then categories where that then becomes harder, those who struggle with OCD. That kind of plays on the anxiety in a way that just builds it. But in the kind of, if I put it in the spectrum of someone who is not struggling with OCD, then they're going to decipher what that fear is, that anxiety, you know, why am I worried about this exam? Is it because I'm not prepared? It tells me something. About what I need to do and respond as well. So there's a right response, I think, and learning to decipher what that fear is.
Mm-hmm. Graham, did you want to say something? It looked like you did.
I thought you did as well.
Partly I was listening carefully to what you were saying. I was pondering because it was going down a particular, not a rabbit hole, but a particular line before we'd maybe thought about the God bit. But I think if people talk to me about a fear of some event or something, it's always good to ask, what exactly is it that you're afraid of?
Yeah,
I think that's a helpful question in any counselling, but particularly as a Christian. You know, if you're afraid of performing in some service, If you're afraid of taking an exam, as Mark gave an example, if you're afraid of having an injection, you know, what is it you're afraid of? Is it the pain of the thing? Is it the experience of the thing? Is it the shame if it goes wrong? Is it that you think it might not help you, but it will hurt you? There's all kinds of things. And it's when you get down to that level that then you can think, is that reasonable? Mm-hmm. And is that proportionate? And those kind of things.
Go
on.
Okay, I was just going to say, is that the level at which you can then also start to determine, is that wrong or not? Because I think, as we all sort of agree, there is appropriate fear and there's right fear. But at what point do you sort of say, well, this fear is coming ultimately from a heart that is not fully trusting God, or that is not fully doesn't fully feel safe in salvation or in assurance that you're going to be okay, that God's going to look after you? Like, where are those lines? Because they're very difficult, obviously, to draw, but I think that line exists somewhere, right?
Yeah, and I think it can be all those things you've just said, not trusting God. It can also be locating our God, really, in ourselves, which then we fear that God being dethroned. So the fear is around the area of, if it's to do with our shame in failure, say, and it's okay to think, well, I don't want to attempt, you know, jumping off this diving board because I think I'm going to fail. That's one kind of fear. But I guess the fear that's a proud fear, because you don't want to take the risk of failing in the sacrifice of others, because your reputation is the most important thing. That's when you've displaced God. But yeah, I mean, I did want to say, just in case we run out of time, that it's a bit of a cliche, but it is true. God speaking in the Bible loads and loads and loads of times says, don't be afraid or fear not, or do not fear. Lots and lots of times. So, and I think that's interesting from all kinds of points of view, but from the point of view that it's clearly a thing, certainly since the fall, it's clearly a thing that there will be lots of things to fear, lots of things to be afraid of. And it's not really, in any of those instances that I could sort of scan through again quickly today, it's not really a sin crime that when God comes and says, do not be afraid, it doesn't say, you know, it's not in the category of stop worshipping idols.
Yeah.
You know, and by the way, don't be afraid. It's nearly always coming to somebody who has a fear. Maybe they fear because they've just seen God, but they have a fear that needs to be allayed by listening to the promise of God or the power of God or the plan of God in a particular situation. So God is very gracious to our fears, and I think people need to hear that you know, when God says don't be afraid, it's not so much a telling off, it's a pointing to himself.
I think that's really helpful, because I think that's at the end of the day, when I decipher my fear, it's where I turn to. Am I going to turn to the one who is my ultimate comfort, refuge, shield, rock, one who can uphold and sustain, or am I going to turn to myself and my own abilities, my own strength, all things of this world to protect me from this fear? And I think that's the primary vehicle that the fear drives me to. It should drive me to the Lord that says, do not be afraid because I am with you. You know, do not be afraid. So I think, I guess I'm slightly in my mind is thinking as well that what we're talking about is the normal range of fears for people, that we're all fearful. We'll all be afraid of something. Where do we turn to that? Slightly different to the person who wrestles with fear in high intensity anxiety. They're going to end up in the same place, but it's just going to be a bit of a different journey.
Yeah, I mean, one of my favourite verses is in Isaiah 8, where it says, do not fear what they fear. The Lord your God is the one you are to fear. And I think it's a really good verse to capture the idea of a distinctive range of fears that the Christian has, but they're all aligned with reverence for God and trusting God. And I think it's an area where Christians can be distinct in that, just leaving aside the ones you were talking about just now, Mark, but in the kind of everyday of life, we should be different in that we don't fear the same set of things that people who are not Christians and don't have any hope fear. Mm. So again, it's not coming from God as a sort of telling us off thing so much, but it is a kind of, here's a promise that you're going to have eternal life, then you shouldn't fear death.
Yeah.
And that this will be something we'll have to grapple with, because our instinct is to fear death, because we recoil from that, because we're made to be alive. And so our whole bodily system in pre-fall and post-fall recoils, you know, and if something's coming towards us, we'll put our hand out to stop it, because we don't want to die. So I think it's okay to, so then we have to kind of instruct ourselves to say, okay, I understand the reaction to death as a physical process, but death as a concept and as a reality, I don't fear that. I should better sit here and say, you know, I fear all kinds of things to do with death possibly, and I fear all the emotional turmoil around that. I don't want to go through that as a long sort of positive choice, because it's part of the fall, but I don't fear dying.
Well, but I think this is a really good way of working this out, because in one sense it is a right thing to fear death. It's a right thing to fear death, of course. It is. But actually, where do I turn to in that? As I turn to the Lord, I can hear the comfort, do not be afraid. Why? Because Jesus has removed the sting of death. So I no longer need to be afraid of it. So and I need to hear those words. So that's where right fear goes to the Lord, and I hear the comfort, do not be afraid. And similarly, isn't it, with it's a right fear to, you know, have I got enough to eat? But again, I'm to hear the words, do not be afraid, I provide, you know, and I look to him. So I think this is where fear, as I decipher it, it causes me to understand what's going on, but I turn to the Lord for help and for comfort and for a sanctuary in that sense.
Yeah, and I think that turning to the Lord idea, for me, like one of the passages that I found helpful, or have found helpful and continue to, is the Philippians 4 thing, where it's like we have a very clear sort of process laid out for us when we're facing anxiety, when we're feeling anxious about something. It's like, so the particular verse says, rejoice in the Lord always. I'll say it again, rejoice. Do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God, and the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. It's like Paul's saying, like, here's a very clear method. It's when you're anxious, pray, bring your petitions to God, tell him about those things, right? Just lay your heart out before him. Then what did he say? He says, with thanksgiving. So what you're doing in that moment is remembering God's goodness to you. You're recalling and repeating what he's done for you in your life, the Ebenezers that you've raised in your past, and you're saying, you're reminding yourself that God is good to you. You know that as a reality. That's what the thanksgiving brings to you. And you present your future requests to God, what you long for, what you desire, kind of in view of him and his work in your life, his plan for your life. And then Paul says, if you do this, the peace of God will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So it seems to me that that's quite a useful thing for somebody in the moment who's struggling with anxiety. Like, do those things. Come before God, bring your prayers and your petitions with thanksgiving, and present your requests, and it's like ABC equals D, isn't it? It's like, it's quite useful, I think.
Yeah, one thing I'd add to that is the promise, you know, don't worry about tomorrow, because today has enough worries about itself. And Ed Welch, in his book Running Scared, which is a really helpful book on fear and worry, he talks about the manna principle, that of today is that we just, you know, the Lord provided for them what they needed in the desert for that day. They didn't need to worry about the next day. They didn't need to worry about two days' time. They got what they needed each day.
Yeah.
And that translates into the New Testament, into grace. So that as I pray and as I remember, as I recall, God promises to give me the grace that I need for today. So I don't need to worry about the next day. I don't even need to worry about the next hour. I just need to, you know, be concerned that actually, and God promises in that sense of fear and giving me that peace, he's given me the grace I need right now. And I think so, just remembering and holding on to that, that the Lord gives what I need right now. I don't need to worry for the future.
Yeah, it's so big, because it's like you can sit there being like, I'm worried about tomorrow. And like the Christian answer is like, well, God hasn't given you grace for tomorrow yet.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Like, and that's exactly that. And that's where I struggle, because what worry does is like a false prophet. You know, it's kind of speaking worry and concern. And I'm really good at being able to see all the concerns and the worries and the anxiety. But what I can't see is the grace that God will give to match that. I find that really hard to imagine how, you know, so you can fear the worst scenario, you know, right fears potentially and worry and become anxious, but you can't see the grace that God will give you, which is why we're just concerned for today and the manner and the grace that he has given me right now, right here.
Yeah,
it's really, really helpful. I think just, maybe it's worth connecting it with the COVID situation going on. I know it's a bit boring because we're always talking about it, but I think informing our fears about that and that daily thing, I was just fascinated by thinking about how that applies to the daily thing as well. But I think the good bit of fear is to say, here's a virus. It definitely kills some people. So I need to fear it in the sense of respect it, honour it, reverence it, and you know, work with what's reasonable in terms of trying to mitigate the danger of it. But the being driven by fear is something that's anti-Christian. Being so afraid that I'm sort of paralysed. And what you were saying just now as well about the longer term thing, it just made me think about sometimes my kind of impatience or looking through and saying, oh yeah, nothing's going to happen till June or whatever. And how many days of grace and patience do I need? It actually helps in kind of thinking, you know, don't worry about or fear, you know, how's Easter going to work for the church? And, you know, how's family connections going to work? And how am I going to feel after another 3 months of this? But just to say, okay, what am I doing right now? Mm. And, you know, are there any genuine fears that I need to just mitigate, or do I need to inform my fears with the promises of God and just get on with today? So it's really helpful just even listening to you guys.
No, I think that's it. Yeah, I find the same. Like, as we sort of draw to a close, I want to continue to talk about like coping mechanisms, I suppose. Like, I think what's interesting, so we I think like a huge thing is obviously sort of theological realignment, or sort of understanding your relationship with God is gonna help you through fear and anxiety. I think God also in his common grace gives us many other coping mechanisms, and it's interesting what the research has shown as things that help you cope and manage with stress, with anxiety. I'll just tell you the list of things because there's only like seven of them. On the coping side, you have perceived control, optimism, and social support. These are the things that the studies have suggested help you cope with stress. Perceived control, optimism, and social support. Mm-hmm. And then on the managing side, the sort of day-to-day, we have exercise. Meditation is something that the studies have pointed to. Cognitive flexibility. And then finally, religious belief or faith is on the list. And so let's talk about that for a moment. Like, obviously, with all things mental and physical, we have a spiritual side and a sort of medical side. So if somebody's ill, we pray for them, but we also seek medical support and in that. When it comes to fear and anxiety, we have the spiritual side, which is primary, I would think. But we have this common grace from God. We have all these things that we can actually do and implement in our lives that are good and that help us manage those things, right? And it's really interesting to me that religious belief and faith has been found by the studies to mitigate fear and anxiety. But what are your thoughts about those things generally?
That's quite a big topic about the interaction of those things. Mm. But just off the top of my head, I was thinking, you know, Elijah's told to eat before he gets the vision of God. Mm-hmm. So there's the sort of acceptance that eating a decent meal is not the only thing. And there are other significances perhaps in that for Elijah. But, you know, stuff like that Jesus tells his disciples to rest. You know, throughout the Bible, there's a kind of an interplay between resting and worship and kind of eating and fellowship and the social kind of overlaying with the sort of spiritual, in that we need each other, and that is part of, you could call that as a social activity, fellowship, as well as a spiritual activity. So I don't think you can create these really, you know, definite boundaries to say, okay, in my fears I can only do spiritual things. You know, Paul says to Timothy, take a bit of wine for your stomach's sake. He says exercise is good, but spiritual things are better. So there's always that interaction, but in the end, I guess the spiritual drive all those other things, and we exercise and take rest because we think that's a provision for God, and we kind of use it to reflect and to be thankful and to take time, but then to return to, okay, so how do I need to think spiritually about this? Well, maybe I'm going off in a different direction.
I think in one sense, all of those things, aren't they, just reflect who we are as human beings, you know, in the sense of I need others, I need rest, I need
exercise,
other people, I need exercise. All of those things reflect. Yeah. But whatever I see that's happening in the horizontal will always be reflected in my vertical relationship with Christ. So if I'm, what fear will show and reveal is will reveal how I am relating to the Father. And there may be a blockage, and it may be that my personality type is going to be more on that side of worry and anxious than someone else. Now, that doesn't excuse it, but it does make it, it just kind of mitigates. It helps me to understand I am a much more fearful person than someone else. And I recognize that. But then how does that drive me to the Father? And I think that's the thing. How do these fears keep driving me to the one who says, do not be afraid? So I think we recognize all the good things because that's just how we're made. That's how the Father's made us. Mm. But how does it drive me back to the Father? How does it drive me back to those promises? And sometimes I get stuck. And sometimes that stickiness is because of just who I am. I'm over, you know, I'm not exercising, I'm not, you know, all of those kind of things. It's very hard to, no one can say it's just spiritual or it's just a physical thing. Yeah. Those things are so closely, and no one will tell you exactly the weightage. So you're kind of working in a muddle. But, you know, you recognise that both those things are at play and you need to work that through with someone, I would suggest, if you're really struggling.
Just something that struck me about your question, which I might answer it better this time or differently this time. I did think when you said about religion that basically in lots of secular training courses, you end up talking about biblical principles in some way applied. But in particular, when you're dealing with trying to control things, it's similar to do with drug dependency or alcoholism, that you need an authority outside of yourself. When it comes to fear, you either make one up, like perceived control, or you submit to one, which is God. And that is very liberating. I think as Christians, we have a proper answer to that rather than a sort of
constructed one,
a made up one, where we pretend to be in control or we pretend that it's going to be all right or we pretend we can cope.
In a way, it's almost the antithesis, isn't it? Like one of them is seeking control to gain more and more control over your life and your circumstances. And one of on the Christian side, it's handing over more and more control, I think, and relinquishing control in terms of giving it over to God and saying, I don't have control of this. Like recognizing your weakness, recognizing your frailty, and then saying, even so, I'll trust God and I'll find my strength in him, not in me.
And to keep remembering, God says, don't fear a lot in the Bible. Mm. And he comes with lots of promises about what he's up to and how he's working for you, for your good, for your glory. Mark wants to speak. Who you want the last
go
word?
On, Mark.
Well,
no,
well, I, go for it.
I'm just really conscious that you could hear this podcast and go, okay, so all I need to do is this. But when you're gripped in the midst of fear or anxiety, it is really, really hard to do or think these things. And as someone who has struggled in that, you know, you do need to, I just encourage you to get help, to talk with someone about it. You know, and I think often we feel there's a shame to it, particularly in the Christian world. Oh, you know, I shouldn't be feeling fearful or anxious. This is a terrible thing and this worry. And actually, we want to overcome that. And just actually, it's not. Yeah. It's something you can speak about. You know, there's a reason the Lord says, do not be afraid numerous times, because we are weak and we are vulnerable and we need help. So let's not shy away from that. And I think much of the discussion we've talked about today is within the normal, what I'd call the normal realms that people fear, not the kind of extremes. We kind of touched on it a bit. But if you really are suffering, and it is a horrible suffer and struggle, then do seek help from either one of us or the pastors in your church if you're not part of Christchurch, or email us at ask@cchh. No, not ask.
Well, you ordinary. Could.
That works as well.
Yeah. Oh, that works as well, does it?
Ordinary@cchh.org.uk.
Yeah. Well, you heard the email address. Do send us any questions or thoughts, or get in touch if you feel like you need to find some support for yourself. Thank you for joining us for this episode. Come back next week. There'll be another brand new one. See you next time on Ordinary.